So this morning we are digging into one of the greatest stories. Like, it's truly the best underdog story, I think, of all time, David versus Goliath. Now, some of you probably know this story really well. If you grew up in a church setting, you likely will have heard this story many times. You've possibly sung songs about David and the stone going round and round his head and the giant that came crashing down. And some of you might not be as familiar with this story, but whether you know it well or it's your first time hearing it today, there is so much that can be learned, that can be applied to our lives, because every single day, every day that you walk on this earth, you are faced with a choice. And it is to live either out of faith or out of fear. Those two things, faith and fear, they are not complementary. You actually can't have both working at the same time. You either live out of faith or you hide away in fear. These are two complete opposite things. See, faith moves us forward. Faith causes us to step in. Faith puts within us that courage and that boldness to move forward. Whereas fear makes you hide and run away. Now, if you have your Bibles with you today, I'm going to be telling the story of David when he faced the giant Goliath. And that story begins in 1 Samuel 16 is where we're going to start. And then the main story is in 1 Samuel chapter 17. So just as a bit of review, last week, Pastor Tyler told us that the Israelites were just tired of not looking like all the nations around them. So they demanded a king. They wanted to do things their own way. And so a king named Saul was appointed, and Saul looked like a king. He fit that profile. He looked like the kings of the nations around them. He was tall. He was regal. But time and time again, Saul neglected to lead the people in the ways of the Lord. He disobeyed God's command. He did things in his own strength more than once. And he rejected God. And so in turn, the Bible tells us that God rejected him as king of Israel. So God tells Samuel, remember, Samuel was the prophet and the judge. He was basically God's spokesperson. God tells Samuel to go and anoint a new king that he would show him. And this king would come from Jesse's family. So Samuel sets out to find this king that he was told would follow God with his whole heart. And so starting in chapter 16 of 1 Samuel, God says, go to Bethlehem, go find this guy Jesse. One of his sons is going to be the new king of Israel. So Samuel goes, he finds Jesse, he gives this message to Jesse and says, bring your sons out. And so one by one, the sons come out. Jesse's like, you know what? We're going to start with the oldest because, man, the oldest is the best. Now, if you're the oldest, you're like, yeah, right, Tyler? Mm-hmm. The oldest is the best. Look at him. His name was Eliab. He comes out. He's parading himself. He looks very kingly. And Samuel at first is like, all right, my job here is done. Let's go. We've got the king. He looks like a king. He sounds like a king. He must be the king. And God speaks to Samuel. And he says, don't judge by his appearance. Don't judge by his height. For I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't see things the way that you see them. And then in verse 7, God says to him, people judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. See, it didn't matter that Eliab looked like a king. God wasn't looking at that. He was looking on the inside. He was looking at where his heart was. And God's like, this isn't the guy. He's not the one that I have chosen to be king. Samuel saw, this guy looks like he could pass. But see, God was teaching Samuel something here, and it was something that needed to be taught. Because the people were just confused. They were kind of immersed in this thought of we've got to look the part. We've got to hold this place in this position that looks like everybody else. And God was speaking to Samuel and by way speaking to the people that the king that I am choosing isn't like anyone that you've ever seen before. So the parade of boys continues to happen, and one by one, Jesse's bringing in his sons, and each time that a new son comes in, God says to Samuel, nope, not him. Seven sons don't pass the test. They come in. Jesse had a lot of sons, okay? And then after the last one comes in, Samuel's like, wait a second, I'm confused here. God says it was going to be one of your sons. You've said that all of your sons have come before me, and God has said no to every single one. And so Samuel looks at Jesse and he's like, are you sure there isn't another son? Which I just think is crazy, except for the fact that I did forget my daughter at home a couple weeks ago. So it happens, okay? It happens. But Jesse all of a sudden is like, oh, yeah. Wait, I forgot there is another one. He's out in the fields taking care of the sheep and the goats. And Samuel's like, call him in. And so somebody goes, probably the next youngest, you know, to go and fetch this forgotten son. And in walks this young kid. The Bible says that he was small and ruddy. I don't know, that means something like reddish or red hair. He reminds me of my little Caleb, right? He was just this kind of little kid, probably 13 to 15 years old. And he comes in and he stands before Samuel. And God says to Samuel in that moment, in the moment that he saw David, this is the one. Anoint him to be king. Now, David wouldn't become king. He wouldn't take that position for another 15 years or so. But he was officially chosen by God at this point. He was anointed at this point in time to step into that position when the right time came. But now, for the next 15 years, David was going to embark on a journey, a season of preparation. There was a lot that this young boy was going to learn in these 15 years. And part of the preparation and the part that we're learning about today is that David was going to learn how to step out in faith instead of fear. And so in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, we meet the bad guys of the story. Now, these were not just the bad guys of this story. These were the bad guys of pretty much every story in the Old Testament. They were the Philistines. They had been quite literally the worst enemy of the Israelite people for years. They were always the bad guy. You know how in the movies when you hear, I got to be careful here. You know how in the movies you always know who the bad guy is, right? In the Bible, the bad guys in the Old Testament, Philistines, 100% of the time. They were known as the worst of the worst. In fact, in 1 Samuel chapter 4, the Philistines in a battle against Israel, they captured the Ark of the Covenant. They stole it. They were despicable. They were despised. They were feared because they were fierce. But now in chapter 17, not only are we introduced to the Philistines again, we're introduced to their champion. They had a warrior that was unlike any other warrior in their army. He was a giant, and his name was Goliath. So here's the scene. You have these two armies. You've got the army of Israel, and you have the army of the Philistines. They are basically at a standstill in battle. They had gone out to meet each other. They're in the valley. The Philistines wanted to attack and attack and attack the Israelites. The Israelites were feeling very afraid. They basically were a demoralized people. And the Philistines come out and they send out their champion, Goliath. And this is what we read in verse 4 about Goliath. It says, Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. That's just like the stuff that he puts on over his head, right? It weighed over 125 pounds. He also wore bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. His armor bearer walked ahead of him carrying a shield. I always wonder, what did that poor guy look like? Who got the job of being Goliath's armor bearer carrying the shield? I don't know. But the point is, this guy is huge. He was a giant. Now, why do you think there's the detail given about his armor and his weapons? It's to contrast what we're going to see in a few minutes from David. But it's to show that this guy was no joke. He came prepared for the type of battle that everyone was expecting, right? A combat, a face-to-face battle with spears and swords and javelins. Goliath was prepared to fight. He was prepared to win. He was bigger. He was stronger than anyone else on that battlefield. He was an impossible force to be reckoned with, an impossible opponent. From a human standpoint, this was an automatic win for the Philistines. No one could stand up to Goliath. They literally did not measure up. They couldn't. No one was as big or as strong or as fierce as him. So Goliath, of course, then has all the confidence in the world, and he comes out and he starts shouting at the Israelite army. And if you're following along in your Bible, starting in verse 8, Goliath stands and shouts to the entire army of Israel, basically these taunts. Why are you even coming out here to battle? Why are you lining up? You guys are nothing. I'm a Philistine. And you guys are just in the army of some guy named Saul. Choose a man. See if you can find someone in your army who will come and fight me. If you can find someone who can fight me and who can defeat me, then hey, you guys win. We'll go away. But if I win, you will be our subjects. We will rule over you. Goliath did this taunting for 40 days, and he did it twice a day. So every morning and every evening, there was Goliath for 40 days. Think about that for a moment. They're just these two armies facing each other, and every day the Israelites had to hear these taunts of this guy who they were terrified of. See, they saw the giant, they saw his weapons, and they allowed their fear, what they could see, to keep them from stepping out in faith. Now, why do we know they weren't stepping out in faith? Because we're on day 40 of Goliath saying, send out somebody to fight me. And they weren't doing it. There was no one who would step out in faith who believed that God was on their side. And so they just stayed in these battle positions. Verse 11 tells us how the Israelites responded. It says this, on hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Their response is just straight up fear. All the way through the Old Testament, every story that we have read, everything that we have studied this far, God has been making it abundantly clear that he is the God of the Israelites, that he is their warrior, that he will fight their battles. Jericho, it was so clear that God would give them the promised land. Yet now the Israelites look at this giant and they respond in fear instead of faith. Instead of holding to the promises of God, instead of believing that God is who he says he is, that he will do what he has said he would do. They are not living in that faith. They are hiding in fear. how far the nation has come from the moment when they saw God part the Red Sea. Now, before we judge them too harshly for their fear and their lack of faith, I wonder how many of us, when faced with our own giants, go to a place of fear first instead of faith. Even when we know our God, we know what he does, we know who he is, we know what he's capable of, we still fall into this fearful camp far too often. I'm guilty of this. I was guilty of this just this week. I saw so many miracles of God this week. It was unbelievable. Of his goodness, of his power, of his provision, of his greatness, like again and again. And yet, one day this week, as I was driving from the church, preparing this message, I'm in my car. I have literally been studying this story. I knew where I was going. I knew that God was saying, we're going to talk about faith instead of fear. I get in my car to go pick up my kids, and all of a sudden, the enemy of my life, the devil, starts whispering some lies to me, some places of inadequacy, some things that caused me to fear. And I'm driving, I was almost to the highway. Like literally, guys, I hadn't gotten very far. I was almost to the highway. And I started freaking out. I'm like, oh God, I don't know if we're going to be able to do this. I don't know if we make this decision, what's going to happen over here? What about my kids? How is it all going to work out? And I began to spiral in a pit of fear. And I was sitting at the light, waiting to turn onto the highway, and it was like the Holy Spirit slapped me right across the face. Are you kidding me, Lizzie? Do you not believe that I can do the impossible in your life? Do you not believe that I am still the God that I was 10 minutes ago? Do you not believe that I am still the God who has delivered you and rescued you and provided for you, that you have seen miracles time and time again? Have you already forgotten? See, when we come up against our own giants, it is very easy to respond in fear. This is why we need to remind ourselves that our God is faithful, that our God is powerful. This is why when someone is healed of cancer, we celebrate and we rejoice, because our God is a healer, and what he has done for them, he will do for you. We stand on the promises of God, and we know that he will deliver us. We stand in faith. We do not cower in fear. The Israelites responded in fear. But then comes the twist. David, remember him? The young boy, the anointed king that nobody knows about except for Samuel and his brothers. David arrives at the battle. He wasn't there this whole time when the 40 days of Goliath taunting. What was David doing? Taking care of the sheep and the goats, doing his job, right? But he's sent to the battle by his dad to deliver some food and to get a report from his older brothers. So David goes to the camp where his brothers are. He leaves the food, and suddenly he hears the voice of the giant. That daily taunting has begun again. He hears Goliath making threats. He hears Goliath mocking God. And while everyone else is afraid, while everyone else is hiding in their tents, unwilling to step out in faith, I want you to see what David does. Starting in verse 26, he says, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" See, David sees through eyes of faith. This little kid, now I'm calling him a little kid, he's 15, and if my 15-year-old were in here, that she would be very upset, right? But in comparison, he's a little guy, right? He's young. And he hears the taunts of the enemy, and he just stands up and he's like, "Who is this idiot? He's making fun of my God, and I won't have it. We're not going to let this go." David sees through eyes of faith. David sees things the way that God sees them. David sees that Goliath is not so much even defying the armies of Israel as he is defying God. David knows that God has promised to defeat the enemies of his people. And it doesn't matter how big the enemy is, because David has faith and not fear. David responds as God intends him to. He believes his God. When the enemy attacks, we need to remember that our God is bigger and stronger than anything any enemy can throw at us. So while the men of Israel see an unbeatable, fearsome giant who is causing trouble for Israel, David sees an uncircumcised Philistine who has the audacity to mock God. Why the whole uncircumcised bit? Because in the Bible, that meant basically that you were unclean. And David's like, you, man, you got nothing on my God. You're insulting my God. I'm going to throw it right back at you. He will not sit back and watch Goliath make any more threats, any more taunts. See, we can either look through eyes of fear and see a defiant giant, or we can look with eyes of faith and see a disgrace that God is about to remove. Man, I love it when we get to see God remove giants. That's a victory. A couple years ago in our last church, we were in a season of revival. Good things were happening. We had just moved into a new building. It was actually Easter Sunday. And we were celebrating this newness and this new life and all the good that God was doing. And we put an ad out in the newspaper to say, hey, the church has moved. And then the attack came. And there was just one guy behind a computer screen who just started going crazy and attacking the church and attacking us personally. And I remember we were sitting at our pastor's conference surrounded by all these faithful people of God. And Tyler and I, I was reeling. I was like, oh no, what's going to happen? Look at what this guy said. It's so bad. People are going to start sharing this, and it's a small town, and everybody knows who we are, and what is going to happen? And I started absolutely freaking out. And Tyler was like, hang on a second. Who is our God? What has he done for us, and what is he going to do? And he responded with faith. And over the next couple of weeks, I had people in our church family come up to me and say, hey, Lizzie, do you not remember? God's brought us here to this place. He has anointed you to lead us. He has a plan and he has a purpose. And all that we can do is pray. People in my church had to remind me to look at a situation with faith instead of fear. We were at the grocery store a couple days later, and this lady, she's not even saved. She wasn't a part of our church or any church. She came up to us. She said, hey, I saw what's been happening online. I saw the attacks. And she's like, I stand with you, and I see how God is blessing your church, and I see how God is moving through your church to make a positive impact in this community. And she's like, you guys are doing a good thing. That's right, and we see it. See, what the enemy tries to do is nothing for our God. When the enemy tries to destroy, when the enemy gives you that diagnosis that says you've got cancer, when the enemy says that you should doubt that God will give you a child, God says, will you stand in faith? Will you believe that I am about to do something? That I'm going to bring a victory. I'm going to bring a miracle. We need to look with eyes of faith because our God is in the business of removing giants. Well, word gets around that David's not afraid, that he wasn't going to stay hidden because of fear. He would fight the giant and he would win because God was with him. So King Saul, I love this, he calls David in. He tries to put all of his armor onto David. Remember King Saul? He's described as this tall, kingly guy. David is this little kid and the armor just doesn't fit. And David's like, dude, I can't wear this. I can't even move. Right? Again, they're making the mistake of looking on the outside instead of seeing what's on the inside. They see him as a shepherd boy. They saw no significance in him. They saw only what they thought were limiting factors. But David doesn't back down. He is willing to fight, and for good reason, because he knows his God. He knows what he has done. And he knows that God has specially equipped him for this challenge that's in front of him. He has equipped him during the time as a shepherd boy. David looks at Saul and basically says, I've got this. I don't need your armor. See, when I was out protecting my sheep, I've come up against lions and bears. They've tried to attack. They've tried to kill my sheep. And I've killed them with God's help. See, David knows that it's not his strength. It's God who is there faithfully leading him and helping him in and through every situation. Every giant that he faces is going down because God is with him. David says, I've struck down both lions and bears, and this Philistine shall be like one of them. For Goliath has defied the armies of the living God. And the Lord Yahweh, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So Saul responds to David, go and may God be with you. And David goes to fight Goliath. David prepares for battle. It says, the Bible tells us starting in verse 40, that he took his staff in his hand and he chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and he put them in his shepherd's pouch. It's a shepherd's staff. It's not a warrior staff. It's not a javelin. It's not a spear. I love that David used what he had, right? These are the tools that I've used to fight the bears, that I've used to fight the lions. It doesn't matter what's here. It matters what's here. And my God is here and he's with me. He didn't need what anyone else had. So David is now prepared for battle and he begins to advance toward Goliath. And let me tell you, he didn't look like a lawyer, a warrior. This didn't even look like a fair fight. I think I saw this picture and I just died because I think this, Josh, is what it looked like. Dun, 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 dun. Okay? I think this is kind of what it looked like. You've got Goliath, who's like Shaq, right? Only in all of his armor. And then you've got David, who's like poor little Kevin Hart up there with his sling and his rocks. This doesn't look like a fair fight. But David's like, I've got God on my side. David didn't need to look like the rest of the warriors. He had what he needed, the stones and the sling. It was a very effective weapon of war for those who knew how to use it. And David had used it many times to fight off the enemies of his sheep. Now, there's a lesson that we can learn here. David used what he has already used in other battles. See, I think that the first time that David encountered a bear or a lion, he might have been a little bit afraid. But the first time that he knocked that bear down or he knocked that lion, the next time that one came, it got a little bit easier to step out in faith. And the next time, a little bit easier. And it builds up a confidence, not in myself, but in the God who protects me and who gives me the tools that I need to knock down this enemy. So by the time Goliath is standing there, he's like, man, we've got this. This isn't new. There's an enemy. I've got the tools that God's given me. Let's get to work. So Goliath sees David, and he again just starts to mock him. Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? The Philistine cursed David by his gods. He's like, all right, come on. I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. And David says to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you all into our hands. That's the sound of a guy who knows his God. He's like, I've got this, not because I am anything, but because my God is with me. And it's not by sword or by spear. I think that's why God had David use a sling and some stones to show us that God is the one who fights our battles. We just need to have eyes of faith. The verse, or this fight starts. And verse 48, I love it. It says, when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly. Now, did he run away? No, he ran toward the giant. He's like, let's go. David is running. He cannot wait to see God deliver Goliath into his hands. He's running, and as he's getting closer to Goliath, he puts his hand in his pocket, and he grabs a stone, and he puts it in his sling, and he begins to swing it in the air, and he lets go of that stone, and the stone goes flying through the air, hits Goliath right in the forehead, and Goliath immediately falls down to the ground. Verse 50, so David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. What a cool little extra note. He didn't do it like the others. He did it with the tools that God had given him. Then we're told that David continued to run over to Goliath. This gets a little gory, but he took Goliath's sword and he cuts off his head with it. So now it gets a little more graphic. You've got this young boy holding the cut off head of the giant in his hand. See, God delivered them through a boy who didn't let fear get in the way. And because of this faith, God gave the victory. This is the story that shows that God will work through anyone who trusts in him. God will honor the faith. Now, if we go from 1 Samuel chapter 17 all the way to the New Testament, to Matthew chapter 17, verse 20, we see Jesus teaching us about this same kind of faith. Jesus says, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Faith as small as a mustard seed. What I love about this image is that although the mustard seed is small, it's tiny when it's planted, it will grow into a massive tree. See, we don't need what the King Sauls have. We don't need the fancy armor. We don't need the kingly position. We don't even need the power. We don't need what the Goliaths have. We don't need the huge weapons or the intimidating stature. All we need is a little faith in a really big God. The challenge from the story of David is just this, that just as David stepped out in faith, we also are called to step out in faith. David could have stayed in the back. He could have stayed out of the battle. He wasn't even one of the soldiers. He didn't have to do the thing that he did. He could have even just stayed with the sheep, lived a quiet, peaceful life. But David was a man of faith. Acts 13:22 tells us that David was a man after God's own heart. That verse means that David saw life through the eyes of faith. David is the example that teaches us, yeah, it is impossible to please God without faith. David understood that God had committed himself to his people, that God had entered into covenant relationship with him, which we've been talking about. He got it. He knew that God would be faithful to his word. He didn't want to sit back. He wanted to be part of the victory. He wanted to be where God called him to be, even if it was in the midst of the battle, because he knew that God would keep his word. He wanted to experience that, to have the testimony to say, "This is my God. Look at what he has done." When the people didn't believe, and remember, they'd been struggling with their belief now for many generations, David believed God. David understood that faith will always drive a person to act. Faith, by its very definition, moves us from the background, from the sidelines, from inside the tent, from guarding the sheep in the pasture, to into the midst of the battle. Fear keeps us hiding. Faith helps us to see life through God's eyes. Do you believe that every battle belongs to the Lord? That no matter what the enemy is, that God is bigger? That when God calls us to truly exercise our faith in him, that we will begin to see the Goliaths in our lives fall? We are going to see what appears to be an unconquerable obstacle fall down. Our faith will grow as individuals, and as a church, we will be able to believe greater and greater things that our God will do. What are the Goliaths in your life? I want you to think about that for a moment. Worship team, you can come. What are the Goliaths that you are facing today? What are the things that look right now like they are impossible to conquer? The challenges, what are they? I encourage you today to step out in faith. Even if you have been facing this giant for a long time and it hasn't fallen yet, I want to encourage you today, don't give up. God has a plan. And your faith will continue to grow and to mature as you trust his timing, his plan, and his purpose for your life. I know that there are needs present in this room. Needs of people who are facing giants. And you need to see those giants fall. And we are going to believe in faith with you. We're going to step out in faith, and we will watch as God brings the victory, because every battle is his. Every battle is his. Let's have eyes of faith. Would you pray with me? God, I thank you that this story that it's a little gruesome, it's a little weird. And yet, God, it teaches us a lesson that we need for every single day of our life. That with you, God, nothing is impossible. That with you, God, when we step out in faith, the enemy falls. And so, Lord, whatever those Goliaths are in our lives and in our situations right now, Jesus, standing in faith and agreeing with other faith-filled believers, we ask that right now, Jesus, you would cause those giants to fall. God, I want to pray for the Fausts right now. Lord, that their house would sell. Or we know that this has been a giant, and it's been hard, and it's been discouraging, and even sometimes feeling like a defeat. And yet, God, you are a God of impossible. And so with faith as small as a mustard seed, Jesus, we are asking that that mountain be removed from them. Lord, that they would be able to move forward in the plans that you have for them. God, again, I pray for Len. Jesus, that this struggle of health, of cancer, that he has been battling for far too long, God, that you would completely and totally remove that giant from his life. Lord, that he would walk in health and in freedom. God, for Vic, we pray that the giant of this sickness and the thing that just keeps him down, Lord, that that giant would fall, that you would bring health and healing and wholeness to him from the inside out. And God, for the unknown giants in our lives, Lord, I pray that you would help us to first identify them and then to say with eyes of faith, God, we trust you to knock them down. So Jesus, increase our faith. Increase our faith today. We trust you and we know that the battle belongs to you. Amen.